Dear God, thank you for blessing me and filling me with your love, courage, faith, wisdom, insight, knowledge, strength, conviction, resolve, endurance, enthusiasm, stamina, passion, compassion, kindness, patience, trust, and humility. Dear wizards, it was suggested that I do my talk on Stoicism, either that or the 13 different ways you can grab your shaft during masturbation. Now, even if I may be an authority on masturbation, which I certainly am, I'm not on Stoicism. And rather than recite passages from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, which is awesome, by the way, look, I've opted just to tell a story from my life. So, you know, after all, I think it's the stories of our lives in which we obviously play the central character that we learn and grow and we can ultimately share with others, our dear friends such as you, dear wizards. Now, this particular chapter of my life, it introduced me to a person to which I felt a very strong connection, one of those special ones that you know is a gift from another realm, a connection that acts, if you like, as a lantern, and it lights your way on a particular journey, a journey that you feel compelled to pursue, generally in pursuit of learning, but it's often a journey that typically masquerades as a quest for something else, something material perhaps, or objective. So to start with, I need to introduce this person. Now, Mr. Reinhold Bucci. So Reinhold was born in Romania in 1942. He started rowing at age 20 as a result of Romania's compulsory national service. At 20, it was compulsory that you either join the military or serve the country in another fashion, such as pursuing an Olympic sport, you know, if you were deemed suitable. Reinhold was a bear of a man, and he was suited to rowing, so he pursued that. Now, after 6 years of full-time rowing, and at the age of 26, he competed in the 1968 Mexico Olympics, where he and his crew placed seventh in the Coxed Four. And now after this, Reinhold, or Reinie, as we called him, he retired from competitive rowing and he studied sports science. He then risked his life fleeing communist Romania. So he crossed the border through Serbia and then I think Slovenia in the former Yugoslavia. Now, this is an event that he described to me as the second scariest moment of his life. He left his wife and two daughters, aged 3 and 6, in the hope to find a far less oppressive life for them all. He made it to Germany, and after what he described to me as an act of God, he became the head coach of the West German rowing team. Now, after 3 or 4 years of coaching, through an Olympic cycle, he led the West German rowing team to medals in the 1976 Montreal Olympics. I think he got a silver in the men's single and a couple of bronzes, I think, in the men's Coxed Four in the pair. Now, at this time, incredibly, he hadn't seen his wife or his daughters for almost 4 years. So he sent money home to them each month, religiously, and they just communicated through letters. He saved what he thought would be enough money to bribe Romanian officials to release his wife and daughters from Romania. Now, he pondered for years and many sleepless nights as to how he would actually do this, you know, either by bribing high officials or by bribing working men, you know, those acting on duty at Border Patrol. He eventually opted for the latter. Now, after informing his wife of his plans through letters, and again, hopeless sleeping nights. He travelled back to the Yugoslavia-Romania border, where he spoke to the two border patrolmen. Both, he tells me, were wielding assault rifles over their shoulders. He offered them each the equivalent of 12 months' salary to bring his family to the checkpoint in 2 weeks' time and release them across the border. Now, this was double what human traffickers, who were often unsuccessful, were requesting at this time. So they agreed, but understandably, Ronnie was sceptical. The day came and it was pouring rain. Now, Ronnie wept when he described this scene to me. He described it to me on a plane, on a flight to Germany. And just the emotion of seeing his family for the first time in 4 years. His girls now 7 and 10, and all of them standing there in the pouring rain. Now, the exchange took place, money for loved ones. So Ronnie and his family all linked hands and walked away from the border patrol in the line of sight of the border patrolman for over 15 minutes. So the scariest moment of Reinhold's life. He explained it was 15 minutes that felt like a year. The whole time he was thinking that he and his family, who had only just been reunited, were all about to be gunned down and shot in the back from behind. And he described to me in that moment, unlike in his plans, he said it made a lot more sense to him that this would happen rather than it wouldn't. He told me that he was just talking to his family the whole time, telling them how much he loved them. They had nothing to worry about. You know, they were all together. The border patrolmen kept their word, and Reinhold and his family escaped Romania through the former Yugoslavia. You know, it's a feat that many Romanians, both before and after this event, had been executed for trying. Ronnie and his family moved to Australia in 1979. In 1984, he founded the Australian Institute of Sport Rowing Program, where he served as the head coach for 23 years. Now, he also served as the head coach of the Australian Olympic rowing team for six consecutive Olympic campaigns from 1980 to 2000. During this time, Australia won 16 Olympic rowing medals, 4 gold, 5 silver and 7 bronze. And this included the awesome foursome era. So unquestionably, Ronnie played the leading role in Australia emerging on the world stage as a force in rowing. Now, I had the privilege of training under Ronnie for about a 6 or 8 month period, during which time I travelled around Europe with him for a couple of months racing my single scull. Now, this was near the end of his coaching career, and it was certainly the highlight of my athletic career. It's quite a story there just in Ronnie's, but just as a little bit of a leadership component to this, apart from Ronnie and his family's obvious resilience. And I suppose this is just for those of you that need to lead and inspire people, which is, look, all of you in one way, shape or form, I'm sure. But during my time training under Ronnie, there were a few things that differentiated him from other coaches that I'd experienced. Firstly, he was never perfect, but he was always present. Now, he was a beast of a man. He swore like a trooper and he often spat when he spoke, but you could access Ronnie and his spit any day you needed him. You know, he'd make time. Secondly, he cared, but most importantly, he acted on his care. He was never lazy. An example of this is that he was well known for flogging people in training, like really flogging you, heaps and heaps of volume, European style. But he'd only let you get on the water if you're within a certain percentage of your resting heart rate. So he was really well known for walking around every athlete in the morning during high volume training, individually checking heart rates and looking people in the eyes. He'd send you home for rest for 1 or 2 days if he thought that you were busted. Now, because of this, Ronnie's athletes seldom burned out, you know, and this certainly wasn't the case with other institute coaches. The third point, he'd say, I don't know, whenever he didn't know the answer. He'd never pretend and he was real. And then he'd often just piss himself laughing. The fourth point I've written down, he used the national training program as an overarching guide, but he developed individual variations of this program so that certain athletes could preserve their strengths and also work on their weaknesses. So again, he hustled, you know, and he wasn't lazy. The last point I've written down, and for me this is by far the most important, and that is that all of Reinie's athletes were absolutely terrified of him. Well, at least that's what I thought in the beginning. But as I progressed, however, I learned that this wasn't the case at all. Reinie's athletes weren't terrified of him. They were terrified of letting him down. So two very different states of being. Now, because Reinie had taken all this time to connect with all of his athletes, taken time to know us as individuals, you know, understand what made us tick, we respected and admired him so much that we would literally turn out life best performances in his presence. You know, athletes strive to make Reinie proud. You know, there are many things that go into this, but I think this reason alone is why he was such a successful coach and a successful leader. Now, I mentioned before that I had the privilege of travelling through Europe with Reinie, and now that I've introduced him as a key character, look, it's this story, it's a key story of my life that unfolded that changed my heart, and it left me with probably what I'd call a deep sense of love and gratitude, you know, something that I feel, in its essence, I've retained to this day. I've felt a deep sense of peace since this event, and it's with this peace that, you know, I feel I'm able to endure. So in a way, maybe this is a bit of a story on stoicism, not because I feel like I'm tough in any way, shape or form, but because I know that I have peace and tranquility, if you like, and I think because of this peace and tranquility that I feel like I've got in my soul, I'm able to endure whatever it is that I must endure. Now, the setting for this story is Rutsburg, which is a small town in North Germany, about 60 k's northeast of Hamburg. Now, in my first season of stillwater rowing, I got crook at the Australian selection trials, and so I started training under Reinie, as he'd been head shafted sort of from the head coach to the development coach position. Now, within a month of training under Reinie, I just clicked, and I had my single skull like absolutely flying. Reinie convinced Rowing Australia to allow me to join him and some of his under 23 athletes on a tour of Europe. So they'd race in the under 23s, and I'd race in the single in the opens. I was about 25 at the time. Now, the first port of call was this international regatta in Rutsburg in northern Germany, where there were all these red-hot scullers from around the world. So we flew into Hamburg, and then I made my way across to Rutsburg. Now, on the morning of the day before we were start to racing, I walked up to the old cathedral at the top of the hill in the island of Rutsburg. It was called the Rutsburger Dom, and an information brochure I kept. It says that it was founded in 1154, and it is the oldest brick church of its kind in Germany. So incredibly, it survived both World War One and World War Two bombings when everything around it got absolutely levelled. So because of this, it had this real mythical aura, I suppose a divinity about it. It was restored in the 15th century and again in the mid-20th century. Anyway, the interior was just stunning, you know, a huge pipe organ at the rear, incredible stained glass windows. There were no worshippers or tourists when I arrived. It was about a 5-minute walk from our accommodation, so I went inside and it was completely empty. I walked in and just sat myself on one of the bench seats just in the middle of the space. I took slow, deep breaths and relaxed into the surroundings. And I became overwhelmed with gratitude. So with my eyes closed, I just contemplated recent experiences and gave thanks, you know, for my blessed life. And embarrassingly, I cried. I wept sort of uncontrollably. Intense waves of gratitude swept over me for my health, for my family, my friends, my life. You know, my heart just felt so strong. And probably what I'd describe as I felt like I had a supernatural buoyancy and love. Now, my eyes opened after what was probably 10 or 15 minutes. And I wiped tears from my cheeks with my shirt. And after standing up and turning to leave, I was really shocked. I was startled to see Ronnie sitting in the back row, the back pew. And he was smiling. You know, we were the only two in this cathedral. But I'd been so engrossed that I hadn't heard or even noticed him walk in. And I was bloody embarrassed because he could have obviously seen that I was crying. It's beautiful, huh? He said. And he was just grinning from ear to ear. And he told me it had been 30 years since he'd sat in that exact same spot. I asked him how long he'd been sitting there, and he said, oh, probably about 10 minutes. But he said, it looked like you're having a moment, so I didn't want to disturb you. We walked to the motel, chatted for 5 or so precious minutes. And during that time, you know, this hard Romanian legend, he was just as gentle as a kitten, just an incredible moment in my life. Anyway, in that afternoon, the lads and I, we had a final tune-up row before the racing was to start the next day. Long story short, I crashed my brand new MPAC, a single skull, straight off the factory floor by running into the German pair, the heavyweight men's German pair at top speed in the middle of the course, and my skull was fucked. The gunnel was so badly smashed, the boat was unusable. A quick search around the competition area revealed that there were no more single skulls my size that were available. You know, it appeared that my Ratzeburg regatta was over before it even began. The German head coach was fucking pissed. You know, both his rowers in the men's pair were injured. They couldn't race. They'd both done their backs. And Ronnie was just as disappointed as me. And it was so bizarre. I couldn't believe it. You know, everything had just felt so right. Like everything had just been so right. Anyway, Ronnie, bless him, he got in touch with the manufacturer, the MPACA rep. He was a couple hundred k's away, I think, and he came across with spare parts, repair materials, and they spent about 5 hours that afternoon into the evening repairing my skull under a marquee by the lake. I had no idea this was happening. You know, I didn't think I was racing until Ronnie popped his head into my room at about 9:30 p.m. And he said, mate, you're racing. You know, we fixed your boat. Again, not to go into it, long story short, I raced over that weekend and I won the regatta. And I couldn't believe it. You know, in the material plane, I wasn't supposed to win. In the final, it was just so close between me and the German sculler. And we'd had no idea who'd won. You know, I crossed the line. You know, in a world of hurt, I sat forward just heaving oxygen. I remember grabbing my foot stretcher and cradled the handles in between my stomach and thighs. I was trying to stay in the boat so I didn't fall in. I threw up. I threw up in my boat, on my thighs and then into the lake. I remember looking up and I saw Ronnie and the AIS lads in the crowd. They were clapping, you know, they looked happy. You know, I waited for what seemed like an eternity and the voice came over the speaker. And, you know, firstly in English, first place, International Ratzeburger, Ruta Regatta, number 47, Dan Ellis Flint, the Australian Institute of Sport. There is nothing more satisfying than a hard-fought victory. You know, the heart of the struggle, you know, the sweet of the feeling. And this moment, it just felt so right. You know, like it was mine and had been waiting for me forever. You know, it was ecstasy, it was bliss, it was euphoria. It felt like it was purification, you know, so all at once. And in that moment, I was just convinced, you know, if we strive, we can really gain, you know, more than just a physical reality. You know, our lives can be supernatural, for want of a better word. You know, here on earth. So a spiritual life is available if we choose it. And as that saying goes, I hope I get it right. You know, I felt like a spiritual being having a human experience. not a human being having a spiritual experience. Now, for me, you know, it wasn't the Olympics. It was the race of my life. And at the awards ceremony, I was presented with this massive medal. And when I got off the podium and paddled my boat around, I finally caught up with Ryan, and he was crying. You know, this hard man was actually crying. You know, the roles had reversed. He took my medal in his hand, and he sort of scrutinised it, and he just shook his head. And he asked me if I'd looked at the medal, and I hadn't. He turned it over and he showed it to me, and the whole medal was just this relief image of the Dom, the Ratzeburger Dom, the cathedral in its centre. And I just remember him just saying to me, "Man, this, it's your destiny, man." You know, like, and then he just hugged me like a bear. And I remember him saying, "Sometimes you've just got to sit back and enjoy the ride." And it's funny. You know, like my Stillwater rowing career was only brief. You know, I missed Beijing Olympics. I got crook at the trials, and that was it. And I had no intention to go around again. To be honest, though, after everything I experienced in Ratzeburg, the spiritual side of that experience and what it did to me as a person and how it changed me as a person, it felt like everything after that was unnecessary. You know, like I'd learned everything I needed to from this pursuit, and I was just going through the motions. And from that, and I think it just appears to me, you know, it's an all too common human shortcoming to assert disappointment at the end of something, a chapter of your life or a relationship or a friendship. You know, most things don't last a lifetime. Yeah, our flames, our connections, they burn brightly for non-uniform periods of time. You know, and for me, if anything, this makes, you know, these events and connections even more precious. Anything but failures. And for me, William Blake's poem illustrates this perfectly, and I know that PM loves this too. "He who binds himself to a joy does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise." Now, since my moment in the Ratzeburger Dom, you know, I've spoken the daily prayer of gratitude, you know, most of which came to me in that moment inside the cathedral. I feel like that's while I was there. You know, it had nothing to do with rowing. There was a deep change waiting for there, a change in my being, which I had to learn. You know, I find when I recite this prayer, it de-shackles me from whatever material nonsense I have going on in my life, and it connects me very much to oneness, you know, to the love and strength of God, the universe, everything, whatever you want to call it. You know, it centers me and it gives me peace and tranquility, you know, which, as I mentioned earlier, it helps me endure. "Dear God, thank you for blessing me and filling me with your love, courage, faith, wisdom, insight, knowledge, strength, conviction, resolve, endurance, enthusiasm, stamina, passion, compassion, kindness, patience, trust, and humility. Thank you, Wizards, for sharing this time and space with me at Carnarvon Gorge. We're all so bloody lucky, and we have absolutely everything to be grateful for. Thanks for listening to me, and I love you all so much."